Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Good morning, everybody. It's my pleasure this morning to welcome Beth Glennon to the seat here. Beth has been a member of the Zen Center for quite some time, probably almost 10 years. That's just my guess. Sort of in the periphery, and then closer and closer to where she became a board member. Kicking and screaming, moving toward the periphery. I mean, moving toward the middle. I say that really in jest. But Beth has been a social worker for her whole life. She worked for the Death with Dignity group for a long time. I didn't look up your actual job title there, Beth. But And now she's become... She's taken the precepts and she's become a chaplain, a Buddhist chaplain. I admire, first of all, I want to thank Beth for her service to the Zen Center, because she was a board member at really a critical time for the Zen Center as we were leaving Rinzai-ji, and she also set up, really helped found the ethics committee. And did just a ton of work on that, as well as the membership. She was really the point person for figuring out how we're going to do membership and voting members at this center. So I want to thank her for that. I also want to express my admiration and also kind of kinship. Beth, I don't know if I've told you this, but you know, when I went to Mount Baldy Zen Center as a 20-some-year-old, I, looking back, I figure I stayed for two reasons, roughly speaking. One was I would not have done that practice. I knew myself. I would not do this practice diligently unless I tied myself down to something like a monastery, unless I checked myself in, you know, with some kind of restraining order. And I feel like... Beth, you know, when we talked about doing this program, there was something of that in the program. Like, I love this practice, and something like this is really going to help me really do it. I hope that's okay for me to say, Beth. The other reason that I, looking back, sometimes say is that, and I really did feel this, I didn't want to get to the end of my life and feel like I didn't really try. I didn't really give it my best shot at figuring this life out. And I feel an echo of that of kinship with that in Beth as well. Beth, thanks so much for coming and doing this. And yeah, speaking of tying yourself down to something, Beth does not love giving a public talk. No. So thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you.
Yep.
So guys, I'm going to have to read this because spontaneous talks are not my specialty.
Better not. Yeah.
I think I'm set up.
You're good.
Thought this out.
Okay.
You know, if my hands shake, I've got this thing holding it. And so I'll try to read it slow. If I get anxious and go fast, you can slow me down. But I knew that I wouldn't be able to think spontaneously and that I had some things I wanted to tell you about. And so... By the way, hi. It's good to see all of you. So I'll just start with, as some of you know, last year I began a program with Upaya Zen Center in New Mexico to train to become a Buddhist chaplain. I have another year to go and want you to know that I am still a student and very much in learning mode. Still, I agreed to give a talk because I'm trying to accept invitations that bring me to my edge. I am not a natural public speaker and have often said I am one of those who would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. But I'm glad to share the story of my path with the hope that it might be helpful to somebody else. I think this talk is really about my relationship with practice and with Zen and how it has intertwined with my work and service. So first you should know that my path with Zen has been a long and bumpy road. I started sitting with the Zen Center in Portland more than 20 years ago after my son Gus was born. I was lonely, sleep deprived, and by my own diagnosis, a little crazy. I went in search of community and found this place where everyone wore black. The socializing was awkward, but they gave me a cushion and told me to sit facing the wall and breathe. And that was what I needed. I kept coming back because I loved the meditation and the Dharma talks. Once a Zen center became a reality on Vashon, I started attending it intermittently. I struggled with the form of Zen, but loved the sitting and loved the community. It was clear that I had a love-hate thing with Zen. I didn't like the prostrations. At first, I refused to do them, but then decided to go ahead with it because it made my back feel better. I didn't like the chanting, so I decided to learn to play the makugyo, that thing over there, really fast so I could get us through the chants even faster. After my first retreat with the three bowl experience, some of you know, I remember coming home and saying to my husband, "Leave it to Zen to ruin a really good meal." Suffice it to say, it is amazing that I'm giving this talk because I have not been an enthusiastic convert to Zen. Yet through it all, I kept coming back because I loved and needed the meditation practice and the community. I also found that there was something inherently reliable about Zen. It had been around for a while, it was consistent, and I liked many of the basic premises. When I would consult Koshin with questions, he was patient and almost always able to embrace a kind of big picture view of Zen, its merits and its challenges. And this has been really helpful to me. Another part of this path has been a commitment to service. In the last decade, most of my work has been working with people who were dying as a home health and hospice social worker, and then as a case manager with aging and disability. And for the last 3 years, I worked at End of Life Washington as the client support coordinator. In this job, I worked with people throughout the state who were looking for support and information about advanced directives and assisted death. We were a paid staff of four trying to serve the entire state. By the end of the second year, I was getting burned out and ended up at UPAYA for a week-long intensive on being with dying. Roshi Joan Halifax is a great teacher and very concerned that professionals serving those at end of life be able to remain present and resourced as they care for others. I realized that in order to continue in this work, I needed a stronger practice. It was at UPAYA that I also learned about their Buddhist chaplaincy program. Of course, I was both interested and resistant to the program. In debating whether or not to apply, I got some good encouragement to go ahead with it. Koshin said something like this, "Go for it. I like for people to go where the work is, and for you there will be a lot of work." I decided to apply and was surprised to be accepted a few weeks later. This last year has been hard, joyful, and definitely memorable. UPAYA is an interesting mix of coursework and Zen practice. They encourage first-year chaplaincy students to focus on inner chaplaincy, studying ourselves and how we show up in the world. I did intensive coursework on systems theory, social resilience theory, and on radical responsibility, on race and social justice. I also sewed a rakusu, studied and wrote a gloss on the 16 precepts, drew lineage charts, sat sesshin, and took Jukai, or lay ordination. Starting my internship at Harborview as a Buddhist chaplain brought even more lessons. On those nights, attending to patients and family members who were grappling with trauma, accidents, fires, heart attacks, gunshot wounds, I could see the true meaning of suffering. I realized that there is no technique nor anything I can do to take away the shock and pain for people. I use the three tenets that I learned at Upaya to guide me. They are not knowing, bearing witness, and compassionate action. As a chaplain, my only real tool is my presence and my willingness to be there with people when their world is falling apart. I have no answers. I am supportive of the needs that arise in the moment. Sometimes there's some gesture of support that makes sense. Sometimes it is just being willing to bear it with people so they know they're not alone. And I have rediscovered a reverence for the mysteries of life. No matter how hard we try, we can't control events. Chaplaincy seems to be an intense opportunity to practice openness and acceptance. We sit on the meditation cushion, present for whatever comes. As a chaplain, I feel the fear, the anxiety, the heartbreak as it arises and eventually falls into this vast space called life. Harborview has helped me want to practice like my hair is on fire so that I might be more useful to patients in traumatic situations. I also want to be a resource for the staff. Harborview has many bodhisattvas working in all kinds of capacities. They are compassionate, generous, and creative. They also see a lot of trauma, and it can be hard sometimes. Roshi says that to develop compassion is to be open to suffering. Some of my greatest teachers have been family members struggling to make the decision to turn off life support and say goodbye to their loved ones. I remember a family of Pacific Islanders in particular who taught me a lot as they fought to save Bob, a tough Marine in his 50s. He had been in the hospital for a number of weeks, and the night I was there, he coded twice. He did not survive the second code and was being kept alive by a ventilator. Once the family members understood what was happening, they began to call relatives, and people came from all over the place and gathered throughout the night. They hugged him, they held his hands, they Googled the prayers they wanted to say, they played his favorite music, and finally, when everyone felt ready, they gave me the nod to have the medical staff turn off the vent. This family worked together to do the work of honoring Bob and letting him go. When it was over, they left arm in arm and tired, like at the end of a long sports event. We are all different in the ways that we say goodbye and recognize each other, and it's very important that we do it. Upaya's focus is one of socially engaged Buddhism, which means that we bring ourselves to the world and we begin where we are. Roshi Jones' teacher, Bernie Glassman, famously said in Instructions to the Cook, "Our faults are our best ingredients." No need to wait until we become enlightened or a more improved version of ourselves. We make the supreme meal by using the ingredients at hand to make the best meal possible and then offer it. I love that he says, "The more defects I have, the more ingredients." I believe in the power of compassion. A belief in the power of compassion is one of the ingredients I bring to my meal. But so are resistance and skepticism. Surprisingly, I am coming to terms with some of the many forms in Zen. I bow to my practice with actual gratitude for what it shows me. I found myself tearful when reciting the Heart Sutra at Upaya last month with 70 people from all over the world. It was loud, it was harmonious, and I thought how amazing that people are chanting this in much the same way everywhere. I see that Zen is an embodied practice, which is more than meditation. We engage all of the senses in this tradition: the taste of the tea, the smell of the incense, sound of the bell, the feel of the cushion, and the light in this room. They all combine to create this mysterious experience that we call Zen. Although I would appreciate never doing Gyodo again. I have affectionately named it Gyodont. Zen combined with service is a pretty great meal. I offer it up to this wonderful Sangha with gratitude for your patience and support.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.